right, welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 62. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And on this episode of the show, we're going to do two movies that are about death itself coming for you. Two recent films, The Monkey and The New Final Destination. We will get to them shortly, but first, as always, we talk about what we've been watching. Not a ton for me this month, but what have you been up to, Chris?
Not a ton either. I guess the big one, and we both saw it, I think you saw it today, is we both saw the new Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning.
I did indeed. Yep.
Should maybe be the final film, and they should give it a reboot in like 5-10 years or something.
You really think it's going to be the final one?
No, because he has recently said he wants to make movies until he's 100 years old.
Yeah, I saw like when they were doing like the premiere of it somewhere or something that are trying to like ask him about that. He's like, I just want people to enjoy the movie. I don't want to talk about that. It's like, obviously he wants to keep doing them if he could.
I mean, this one very much is set up to be like a bookend to everything over the last 30 years of this series. I know we are on differing ends of this. I don't think you had any fun with it. I did enjoy it. But it's probably these last two films are very troublesome. Just storytelling, it's muddled. This is a 3-hour movie. I think the last one was like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
It was literally almost as long. It was like maybe 5 minutes shorter.
Well, and that's where I came out of this one going, like, in Dead Reckoning, I was like looking at my phone, like, wondering when the hell, like, when is the good stuff going to happen in that? Not that I disliked it. It's just, like, towards the bottom of the Mission Impossible movies. This one, I was like, I didn't look at my phone. Like, I was entertained the entire time. It's just very dumb. I think the villain, the entity, sucks. Like, it's a bad villain. The stakes are stupid. Like they're always trying to save the world, but in this one, it's just like, oh, we're saving, like, complete annihilation. If we don't do this, everyone dies. Like,
yeah, it's going to be a nuclear, you know, this AI is going to take over the nukes of everybody, and then everyone's going to, like, preemptively strike each other, and yeah.
And because of like how stupid the premise is like there never feels like there's a chance that they're gonna fail, right? Like, they're not gonna end the movie with total global annihilation. Like, I think it would have made for an amazing film if they were just like, oops, he doesn't do it this time, and boom, everything's gone. No, they didn't do that. You know, he saves the day once again. In a dumb way too. It's like he connects two devices together at the end to trick this AI thing into going somewhere else, and it's like, doesn't make any sense. How are these devices connected to the internet? Like, well, you think about it, it's like none of it really checks out, which is fair. That's fair for a lot of them. Like, if you really start digging into the Mission Impossible stuff, it's like, this is all pretty dumb. But this one goes, like, it jumps the shark a little bit. Like, they bring back the dude from the CIA chamber. Like, he's in that secure.
Yeah, from part one.
Yeah. And it's like, all right, now we're really stretching it out. Like, they introduce a dude and introduce him as Jim Phelps' son. Like, and he's supposed to be, like, I don't even know what he's there for. Like, he's not really an antagonist to Ethan or the team. She's like, I'm going to bring you in, but not really. Like, none of it makes any fucking sense.
He was in the last one, but they do a lot of things in this new one to try to tie it back to previous entries.
Every single one. Like, they, like the rabbit's foot from 3, which
yeah,
a biological device, like they tie that one in there. It's like, evidently wasn't a biological device. Like, everything they've ever done, they try to tie it all in, and it's all a little bit sloppy. And it's like, what kind of worked about the previous Mission Impossible movies was they're just kind of standalone. Yeah, 5 and 6 linked, but they feel like one big cohesive story at the end of it. But none of the other films tied together. And now it's like, oh, well, we're going to tie every single film together. So good luck with that. Hope you enjoy. I enjoyed like the whole dive sequence on the submarine. And like, I thought that was cool. The plane sequence was neat. But that's really, those are the two big sequences.
That's it.
Like, it's a 3-hour movie. Those are your two big action film, action sequences. There's like a car chase at one point, but. Yeah, like when he's leaving the facility in South Africa to get onto the airplane. There's like a whole car sequence in the tunnels, which is wasn't bad. It's short.
I already forgot.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I get where people be like, "Yeah, this sucks. Like, it's not doesn't work for me." But whatever, it's over now.
I thought this was a disaster, and it's funny, like, hear your thoughts on it, because like, I kind of differ with you on what I don't like about it. Like, so I heard so much about how this takes forever to get going, and the first hour is boring. And I guess there's like some truth to that, but like, I actually didn't hate the story. Like, I liked the idea of this AI being out of control, and they have to stop it, and you know, it's gonna bring the world to nuclear annihilation. And I actually was like, oh, I thought it was cool that they tied it to the MacGuffin from part 3. I didn't mind that they brought back the guy from the first one. Like, I was kind of like on board, and I was there like 5 minutes.
Like, I wasn't not on board with it. It's just really silly. It's goofy. Like,
I like the idea too of like doomsday cults rising up because of the way the AI influences them. Like, it feels of the time.
Sure. But,
like 5 minutes in this, like when the opening credits, like right before the opening credits, like he rescues Grace and he's like, I wouldn't let anything happen to you. I thought that was funny. And then they start the opening credits and they play that music. And I'm like, you know what? I put everything aside. I'm here to have fun. I've always liked the series. I didn't like the last one. Going, I'm like, at this point, I had an open mind. And that lasted for about an hour for me. And then as it went on, like, I didn't think the action scenes were any good at all. Like, I didn't care about the sub scene and the flying scene. Those are basically all you get. I was so surprised because, like, one of my complaints about the last one is it really only has two action sequences. It's like a car chase.
Yeah.
And then a train sequence at the end. And, like, here it feels like even less. And yeah, like the whole movie starts to collapse under the exposition that they keep doing. Like, so they go do this sub thing, and I was starting to get bored in the sub part, like, strangely enough. It just didn't work for me, that scene. And then afterwards, to set up the next thing that they're going to do, they stop the movie for 10 minutes to explain again why they have to go after Gabriel, why they can't just kill Gabriel, and this is what they're going to do. Like, it just, the movie stops like that several times to just explain. Like, I honestly feel like the movie spent more time explaining what would happen than the two big sequences in it. And so, yeah, I was like, by the end of it, I was just like ready for it to be over. Like, I was just like, please, please, please end. I was out of the theater immediately. Not a fan, unfortunately. And like, I really like the series, but like these last two ones for me, they lost me. I don't know, you know, and I know like it's not me jumping on the bandwagon because like I was one of the few people that walked out of the theater of the last one being like, what the fuck was that? That was not as good. And I stand by that. I think this is possibly worse, but some people are having fun. Like, you enjoyed it. Like, people are really split on it. Like, a lot of people are like, this is way better than Dead Reckoning. And then there's people like me that I just was just like, I'm done with this. Like, I don't even know if I'm back for another one if they do another. They, like, forgot how to make these movies, I feel like.
yeah, I don't know what happened. Like honestly, it should have ended at Fallout.
I know.
It was such a good ending. It ties back to, like, you know, the revitalization of the series with 3, and then they, like, do these two more, and it's just like, they feel a little bloated. Like, I still enjoyed them, yeah. But it's a 5-hour story, almost 6-hour story that I don't think, like, nothing in it is exciting as anything in Rogue Nation or Fallout. I don't
know.
Go watch those.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed. What else have you been watching?
The rest of it's just television stuff. Another one that you've also watched. I watched all of Andor.
Yeah.
Excellent TV. I did think that in season 2, like, there was a little string. I think it was like 4, 5, 6, maybe. That it started to. Like, I was like, it started out really strong. 1, 2, and 3, the first 3 episodes.
Yeah.
Then I was like, this is getting a little long. Like, when are things going to start happening? And then 7, 8, and 9 really start kicking it in. And then it wraps up excellently with 10, 11, and 12. Some really good stuff in it. It's really good Star Wars.
Yeah. I think. The stretch from 7 to 9, it was just masterpiece, and especially episode 9. That, like, might be my favorite Star Wars thing ever. It's like this thriller where they're trying to get a senator out of the Senate, like, and she's giving this, like, awesome speech about, you know, the Empire and genocide, and it's just, it was absolutely fucking thrilling. And you realize, I guess she realizes, Senator Mothma realizes, like, on the way out, like, just how high the stakes are when people are just getting fucking blasted in the face and stuff. And I love, too, she had to make a leap of faith in that episode because she, you know, she has to trust this guy Andor, who she doesn't know from shit. And for all she knows, he's the guy that's going to kill her. Like, she doesn't know who to go with, and she, you know, has to make a really tough choice. And, like, I totally felt that that beat in the story. Like, just the look on her face when she gets in the car at the end. I loved episode 9. I literally watched that episode twice, which is a very rare thing for me. 10, 11, 12. I liked 10 a lot, because 10, you learn about Luthen, who was, like, the guy that was kind of, like, leading these, like, terrorist attacks and whatnot, and you find out kind of where he came from and what makes him tick and stuff, and I really liked that. And at first I was like, bad, you know, this is, like, mostly flashback episode, but no, it's totally good. I thought 11 and 12 were just, like, they're good, but, like, it, like, 12 especially just feels like it's just setting up Rogue One.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a standalone ending to me.
And I mean, that was always going to happen with this.
Yes, that was the plan. Yeah,
it's like you were always going to back right into Rogue One because Cassian doesn't have anywhere to go after that.
Yeah,
and the way they timed this, with Mothma leaving, like, everything, the timeline is so tight between when all that happens and the start of Rogue One, and then the start of actual Star Wars.
Yeah.
There wasn't, 12 was it was more like, we're gonna like see, there's gonna be this shootout at the beginning, which was fun. But then everything else is like,
epilogue.
We're gonna like look back at everybody and see where everybody's at right now.
But, and I did love the fates of a lot of the characters. I loved how they ended. God, I can't think of his name. It was like Partagaz or like one of the, Imperial officers. I love what they did with him. I loved what they did with Deidre. She had a fitting ending. I just felt like, you know, if you were a person who just watched Andor and then, like, that's the last episode, I just don't know that last episode quite stands on its own. But
yeah,
I don't know if you watched Rogue One after, but
I didn't.
I did. It's great. It is, like, just the perfect you know, ending to all that is just a blast. It's just like, here's your action film at the end.
I don't think we'll, like, what I'd really love is, like, a series, because there was, in Rogue One, they kind of explain, like, you see the start of, like, Saul rescues Jin, but then this giant gap in between of, him working with her and them doing their rebel shit. I would love to see some of that, because, like, what you get of Saul in this is he's, like, completely unhinged guerrilla warfare.
Yeah.
But I don't think Disney would ever greenlight anything here again, because this cost them so much money. It's excellent, but it cost them so much money.
Yeah, this Andor is really excellent. I would be like, again, I'd watch it, especially if Tony Gilroy wanted to do it. But, like, you know, I'd be surprised, because, like, they say, you know, they make it clear in the show that he's nuts, and then the movie they call him an extremist. Like, but it's like, how much more extreme do you could even get than Luthen? Because Luthen was pretty much like, he liked to stick in the shadows and everything, but he was willing to kill whoever, you know. Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, I loved what they did with Lonnie. Like, man, Andor was fucking great. Neither of us are, like, saying anything new here. Everyone who watched that show loved it, but man, they, like, knocked it out of the park.
Yep, excellent stuff. Go if you have any. I mean, I think it works even if you don't really like Star Wars. But
yeah,
if you have any love for Star Wars, like, it's a must watch.
If you like, you know, stories or movies or whatever about people rising up against oppressive governments, this is, like, the top shelf shit.
And then one final thing, I think it just wrapped up, and I just watched the final episode, and wrapped up a couple weeks ago. I mentioned this a couple months ago. I started watching Dr. Odyssey, which is this, like, weird drama. It's like a medical soap opera on a boat with Joshua Jackson and Don Johnson. It wrapped up. If it doesn't come back, I'm fine. It's popcorn TV. But I think it wraps up real well. Like, if it doesn't come back, whatever. You know, all the characters end up where they need to. I don't know how you bring it back. Because you're going to lose. To me, the show was, like, centered around Philippa Sue's character. And she's going to leave to go to med school or something. So, like, you lose her. You have Joshua Jackson and the other nurse on the ship doing, like, you know, their bro shit. But who cares about that? Like,
spinoff show.
Yeah, I guess. Yes, you could do that. It's fun enough, like, as, like, side viewing shit. Like, you know, put it on while you're doing stuff. I had a good time with it. It's weird that, you know, it did pretty well, I think, ratings wise, and still, you know, we're now moving into June and still no word on whether it's being renewed or not.
Mm.
Got a mention from John Oliver on his show last week, where he was like, what the fuck is ABC doing?
I think I might have seen that, yeah.
Anyway, that's it. That's all I've seen.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have much, but I'll touch on one or two things. You know, speaking of people rising up against oppressive governments, speaking of content nobody cares about, The Handmaid's Tale been on for fucking ever. It's been on since the first year of the first Trump administration. That's how long it's been on. And I've mentioned it on the show before, but it's wrapped up now.
All done.
I would say for most of its, you know, course of the series, I'd say the show was pretty bad. And that continues in this last season. There's a couple things that kept me watching. One is my wife likes the show, so that alone would have kept me watching. The other thing is, it's like, I love stories about, like, you know, people rising up against oppressive governments and shit. Like, I love that shit, right? And so it's like, even when it's done kind of ham-fistedly, I'm still like, yeah, fuck those guys. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in it. And so that's kind of where I went on this last season of it. It was like, it's entertaining for sure, because now you're finally reaching the point of, like, the rebellion really coming together and making some. But every episode has, like, bad directing. They should have never let Elizabeth Moss direct the show.
Mm.
And even worse, like, the writer's room should be sent to prison. Like, every fucking, literally every episode had at least one scene where I just, like, stopped and looked at my wife. I was just like, what the fuck is this right? Like, the dialogue is so fucking horrendous. Like, could not believe how bad the, like, I'll try to give you a couple of examples. Like, there's one episode where, you know, Elizabeth Moss, the main handmaid, and this other girl get in a fight over who got raped more. It's like, what? There's another episode where they have a conversation about, like, oh, that dude was, like, Angelina Jolie hot. And I was just like, and then they start, like, naming off, no, like, more like this hot. And I'm like, they start naming off all these celebrities. And then I'm just thinking, like, what happened to the celebrities in this world? Are they part of Gilead? Like, this evil government? Are they, like, were they murdered by, like, it's just like, why would you even bring this up? Every episode had just, like, some fucking scene where you're just like, who is typing these dialogue out on their computer thinking that this is fucking brilliant? But I'll give a tip of the hat to the show in that its penultimate episode was a banger. It was very entertaining. And, I mean, you can guess, like, that's when the shit goes down. And when it goes down, like, that episode front to back is very entertaining. And it's an episode where, like, halfway through it, you're like, oh, shit. Like, they're about to hang, like, all the handmaids. Like literally, they're about to string them up. And you're just like, how is this? Oh, shit, we're going for the bad ending. Goes in another direction. So I just say, if anyone has fallen off the show, I would not recommend just, like, watching all of it. But if you were once a fan, or if you're just curious, like, you could probably, like, know nothing and just watch this one episode and get it. So that is season 6, episode 9. I believe it's called Execution. And yeah, really, really solid episode. And then it came back for one more episode where absolutely fuck all happened. Absolutely nothing, and it sucked. Terrible.
What if you were like, because you said it fell off at some point, like you said, most of the series was bad. Like,
yeah,
it's like the first two seasons good. The first season,
I'd say
good,
the first, like, I'd say the first season.
And is that the part that follows the book? And then
I think so. I think so. I think that could have been the problem here.
Okay. I've not seen any of. My wife watches it. I don't know if she's finished it as of yet, but she had been watching it. So.
Well, yeah, Tyler Jeff said that he really enjoyed the second to last episode where everyone gets their comeuppance. There's, like, a really cool plot about getting a bomb on a plane with a bunch of commanders on it, and how that plays out is just excellent. But the rest of the show is just like, I'm just like, Jesus, this is mediocre. See, don't tell her that part. Just be like, Jeff enjoyed the second to last episode. He said it was really fun. I'll just throw one more, because, again, I haven't seen, it's been mostly TV, and we've discussed most of the stuff to death anyways, but I did get a chance tonight to watch a movie I've been curious about for years, and that is the Jonathan Majors movie, Magazine Dreams, which I think I've brought up to you before. I don't know if you've heard of it or seen any trailers for it.
Don't remember.
It was supposed to come out in 2023, and then, Majors ran into some issues in real life that sidelined his career and sidelined this movie. This movie was poised to be a big, I think they were aiming to make it a December release in the hopes of Jonathan Majors getting an Oscar nomination. in an alternate universe, he would have got an Oscar nomination for this movie. He is incredible in it. It is, one of those lonely, unhinged man movies. So it plays even more eerie when you know that he might have issues in real life.
Kind of just Jonathan Majors.
Yeah. You know, so very much like Taxi Driver or Joker or Falling Down or any, there's a million of them, right? And I like those types of movies. I've always enjoyed them. And this is another one of them. And it's about Jonathan Majors is this guy who has dreams of being a famous bodybuilder. He's working really hard at it, but he also is socially awkward, much like Travis Bickle and Taxi Driver. Mm-hmm. And he's got a whole host of other issues. You know, he's like beating up his body, trying to become this thing that he dreams of. He works at like a bagger at a grocery store. Not a whole lot going on in his life outside of like his one big dream. And yeah, it's just like if you are into those types of like Taxi Driver, movies like that, this is well worth checking out. Like he is just fascinating to watch from beginning to end. It's just like, where is he going to go? Like this guy's so unhinged. Like he starts at like an 11 where you're just like, oh shit, this guy's very troubled. And there's some crazy shit that goes down in it. I really enjoyed it. Again, not going to be everyone's cup of tea. It is very, not a lot of sunlight in it. It's very dark. And yeah. Obviously some people won't want to watch it because of him. I think it's worth checking out because of him. I can see people having certain issues with it, but I thought it was really well directed, looked great, and it was one of those tour de force performances. So I thought it's well worth checking out if you're into those types of movies.
Streaming now?
I rented it, and it's still not the normal price, but it was like on sale, so it was like $9.99 to rent.
Okay.
I've just been waiting for years because I'd heard such hype at the festivals when it came out, years ago. So I was like, all right, $10. All right. So, yeah, that's it. Yeah, are you ready to talk about some movies about death? Yeah.
Sure.
We'll start with The Monkey from this year. Came out February 25th, 2025.
Everything okay up there?
Yeah, everything's fine.
Oh, that's odd. I don't remember locking this.
You wouldn't have to remember if my aunt had a wind-up toy monkey at the yard sale.
Oh, not a cherished childhood memory now, was it?
The coroner said it was an accident, but it was no accident. It was a monkey. When I was a kid, my twin brother and I found something that loved to kill. I did everything I could to make it go the fuck away. But it had other plans.
Hello, brother.
Bill.
Why don't you vanquish it, huh, Bill?
Wait!
We have been chosen to witness its power over life and death in its most devious ways.
It's a toy monkey?
It's evil. It's basically the devil.
Everybody dies. And that's life.
Oh, fuck.
Is written and directed by Osgood Perkins, who we've discussed his film Long Legs on here last year.
Mm-hmm.
Based on The Monkey by Stephen King, which I think is one of his short stories. I'm guessing in like Skeleton Crew.
Yep, it's in Skeleton Crew.
It had a budget of 10 to 11 million, made a box office of 68 million. So it did pretty good.
Good turnout.
So yeah, this is an adaptation of a Stephen King story, but if you're familiar with the other series we're going to discuss tonight, Final Destination, I think this feels a lot like it doesn't feel like what this feels like to me is if they gave Final Destination to like an auteur director like Osgood Perkins and said, reimagine it. That's kind of what The Monkey feels like to me. I don't know if you'd agree with that or not, but like,
sure, I could see somebody taking the concept of Final Destination of like death coming for you in like these like Rube Goldberg type contraption ways, where just like a series of coincidences just like snowball into a death. Because that seems to be that's what a lot of The Monkey is. Because the monkey's not. It's a toy. But everything is kind of attributed to it. So I could see somebody taking that idea and being like, yeah, here's like a new Final Destination for sure.
We're going to make a physical object, a manifestation of it here, right? But they kind of do that in the other movie we're going to discuss this month too. But I think what I mean more is, I mean, this is very humorous, but it's a little more artfully done than I would say the Final Destination movies are. You know, like, this feels like something done by a real director, not kind of like a throwaway slasher kind of thrill ride like those movies are.
Sure.
If that makes any sense. Also, I'd say another difference is, it's not just Rube Goldberg stuff in this. Like, you could just die from... So, like, the first half hour of this movie is, like, when they're kids, right? It's, like, these two twin brothers that are kids.
Yes.
And their mom... Like, one point, one of the brothers walks in, and their mom is, like, cooking, and she's, like, chopping stuff, but she has her back turned to him.
Oh,
and
he's
like, Mom. And then she turns around, and she's, like, blood is like her eyes are all bloody. There's like blood pouring out of her fucking nose and shit.
Yeah, she had like an aneurysm or something.
She had an aneurysm. So it's more, because that's one thing that's like silly about the Final Destination movies. It's like, oh, death is coming to get you. Like, there's this whole thing in this other movie we're talking about tonight where it's like this person death proofs their house, but it's like you could just die from a heart attack. You know what I mean? Like, Final Destination movies they're kind of silly, but I like that this is just like, no, you could die for any reason. And they explain like the mom dying in the good brother, Hal, in this. He explains the mom dying. He's like, the doctors called what happened to my mom a boomerang aneurysm, but I was the only one who knew what it really was. I'm quoting him. He said, the chances of it happening were 1 in 44 million, and that's just another way to say it has to happen to somebody, and that's how it works. It kills who it wants when it feels like it, and it doesn't owe you an explanation. It doesn't take requests. It's true what it says on the box. It's just like life. And I like, you know, I think that the Final Destination movies and this are kind of like meditations on death, but I do think that, you know, one is more of a like carnival thrill ride, and then this is a little like, this is fun. This is a very fun movie, but it's a little more like, it feels like it's trying to say something about it. If there's something that both of these movies kind of have the same message, which is YOLO, basically.
Yes.
It's like, there's nothing you could do about it, right? Like, so yeah, the movie spends, like I said, like a good half hour.
Well, I would say in this, it's like you could stop wishing with the fucking monkey.
Well, yeah. because that plays out as the movie goes on, and we'll get into that. But there's something set up in this first half hour that is paid off kind of at the end. But it actually starts off with an Adam Scott cameo. I don't know if you remember that. He's like a pilot.
Yep.
And he runs into this pawn shop, and he's got this little toy monkey with the cymbals and the drum. Or actually, no. And this is the drum. It's like a monkey with a drum. If you look at the old Stephen King cover, it's like the cymbals. Yeah. But he's desperate to get rid of this monkey. He's like, it's not a fucking toy. I just want to get rid of it. And like, it starts off with a good kill. You got to start these types of movies off with a good kill. It sets off like this harpoon in this pawn shop. It goes right into the owner's, you know, right in the middle of him. And then rips his intestines out. But then after that, you know, and you've come to find out that Adam Scott was their dad. And he's, you know, he was trying to get rid of this thing. And you find out that, you know, their dad abandoned them when they're little, obviously, because he was trying to keep them safe, right? But, you know, another Stephen King trope right away, that, like, the mom's telling him, your dad went out for a pack of cigarettes, and he never came back.
Yep.
Which is exactly how Stephen King's dad disappeared in real life.
He reuses that often.
Yes, yes. And like, this feels like a Stephen King movie. I think especially because of the voiceover by Theo James, who is one of the, you know, both of the brothers.
Yeah.
Like just like that voiceover I just read you, that just sounds like Stephen King. And it's just like a trope in his movies. Like all of his like good, like artsy movies, like Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption, I think has voiceover. Right. So like right away, I'm in my comfort zone. I'm like, you know, I love this type of Final Destination story, and I love Stephen King, and this kind of mixes the two of them. But there's a death early on. So they got this, the kids, you know, somehow the monkey shows up at the kid's house, and there's a death early on where they go to a hibachi restaurant, and I think it's with their babysitter.
Yep.
And silly, but like somehow the chef slices the babysitter's head off, and she lands on the grill.
Yeah, he's like waving the swords around her, or like the
yeah, I just don't get how that happens.
Accidentally cuts her head off.
But then they go to, they attend her funeral, and then afterwards, like the two brothers are kind of asking their mom about death and stuff, and then she's like, very morbidly, like, yeah, everyone's gonna die. You don't know when it's coming. You don't, you know. Nobody knows. You can't control like how you're gonna die. Like it could. Some people die in really, really like. Just starts telling the sons like really horrible ways that they could die. I'm like, geez. And then just like, you know, so what do we do? And she's just like, well, let's go dancing, because that's the only answer there is. Like, what, you can't do anything about it. You're gonna die, right?
Well, go have some fun.
Yeah, and that's kind of the message of the movie. She's like, let's go dancing. So she eventually dies from the aneurysm. I think it's at the first funeral. There's a very, like, fucking stoner priest that's just like, yeah. Yeah. There's a humor to this movie that I think won't be for everyone, but, man, I found it really, really funny.
Because it's like, because you have these, like, brutal deaths and these, like, very dark themes. And then just, like, some goofiness on the side. Yeah. Like, and sometimes the deaths are also goofy, like the hibachi one. There's one, the fucking ant, like she runs out.
Yeah,
fire. It's hysterical.
Yeah, but she runs into a for sale sign. Yeah. Do you remember that?
It's so funny, but it's fucking like morbid. Then they just have like these goofy lines, and there's people saying dumb shit, and there's like this storyline of like this guy and his son, and just trying to stay away from him, and he goes, and his stepdad or whatever is like he's just like a complete jackass, and it's hysterical like the way he's treating him, and it's there's just like a weird sense of humor over everything.
Yeah,
and it's like alongside the death,
and it's like, I don't know, either I think you kind of vibe with Perkins' humor or you don't, but I definitely do. I think it's so, like, after their mom dies, the aunt and uncle takes them in, And the uncle has this little heart to heart with Hal on the stairs in their in his house. And he's like, we never wanted to have kids, but here we. And the uncle's played by Osgood Perkins here. He's like, here we are. He's like, we're also swingers, but oh well. Like, it's just like, why are you telling this kid that? And he's like, I promise you, though, we're gonna do our best. It's just that our best might be pretty bad. The kids try, like, they realize that the monkey's bad. They're trying to get rid of it. Like, I think Hal chops it up and he can see it bleeding, but he throws the pieces in a garbage truck. They move to Maine. It shows up intact at their new house. Bill, his brother, like the twin brother, who's like another Stephen King element, is, you know, the main character is like nice and sensitive, and then his twin brother is like a bully, so you have the bully character.
Yeah.
He starts playing with the fucking with the toy, and their Uncle Bill gets trampled by 67 horses on a camping trip. They show the sleeping bag being opened. They're like, it looked like cherry pie, and it's like, yep, that's exactly. I bet you they use that.
Oh, absolutely, cherry pie filling.
Yeah, but the end of this like opening half hour kind of ends with that, and then it ends with the brothers deciding the best they could do is like lock the monkey back up in its box. You know, they like chain it up, throw it at the bottom of the well, and then we flash forward to like 30 years later or whatever. It's like 35 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, they Jason him like yeah. Chain it up.
Yes, put him at the bottom of the
well.
Yeah. We cut to the future, and I think Hal's working in a grocery store. We don't know what's up with Bill, the bully brother. They're both played by Theo James from The White Lotus. The two others don't keep in touch anymore. And then there's an exciting incident to like kind of bring them back together in a way, or at least contact each other, and that's that their aunt dies, like you said. She like her hair gets set on fire, she runs out of her house. She gets impaled by a for sale sign. I think it's Bill that calls Hal to tell him, like, you gotta go take care of our aunt's shit. You gotta try to find that monkey and take care of it or whatever. As much as there is a story, it's this. It's that Hal does go back to his aunt's house, but he brings his son along with him. And yeah, it's like he stays away from his son like his own father did, because he's worried about, he doesn't want people around him. We get some good deaths. There's a part with I think it's like the realtor or something. It's like showing them around the house, like his aunt's house.
Yep.
And she gets offed by a gun. Like, it's in a class, pretty good.
Yeah, I think if you've seen the trailer, that one's in it.
Yes, yeah, it's in the trailer. She actually tells them, like, when he arrives, like, man, there's been a lot of, like, deaths in this town lately. Like, all these things, like, this one guy, this one lady, she got killed by a cobra on a golf course. Hal goes, there aren't any cobras in Maine, are there? And she's like, well, there was that one. Like, I don't know. Even that humor hits for you, it doesn't. It does for me. I find it very funny.
It's a very dry humor, so it's it's very good.
But I guess so. Then you kind of like, and then you see there's like an estate sale because she's dead, and you see like this kind of like metal looking kid, like this heavy metal looking kid, like buys the monkey, and you're like, what's going on? Is he the one that's like the cause of all this like trouble now in this town? And no, it's not. It's that. Bill had found this kid and bought the monkey off him, and Bill is obsessed with turning the key on the monkey's back because he believes that the person who turns the key will. So he's causing all sorts of havoc, and you know, it comes to like a confrontation at the end, where like you just see like they go, like his brother's like hiding in some like empty warehouse or something. They go to confront him and he's like, "Ah, I've been turning the key," and like there's like planes crashing in the background, like he's causing like chaos on a massive scale. And then one of the, you know, he's got his place all like booby trapped and shit, and something sets it off and he gets his like head blown off by like a bowling ball or some shit. Again, I don't think the movie has like a super strong plot, but I just like love it. Like, I don't know, like I just love like the ideas in it. I love the sense of humor.
Well, it's not super strong, but like there is this whole idea of Bill, he's like going back and got the monkey because he has realized that Hal wound it when they were kids and killed his mom. And so he's trying to get revenge on Hal, or he wants to die. Like he's like one or the other, but like, I'm going to get you, or maybe something gets me. But he's causing all this chaos to draw his brother in to be like, look, I know what you did.
Yeah, I can't believe I like skipped over that. I was probably gonna get into it in my thoughts, but it's like, I don't think the movie has like a strong like plot. Like this happens, then this happens, then this happens. Like no, I think it has like a strong emotional story though. Like where it's like, oh yeah, so the Bill like reveals that like, I know Hal, you were the one that turned the key that killed mom. That's what you had, the aneurysm, and you know he's just gone completely unhinged. But he ends up dying. And then Hal and his son kind of like drive off as everything's like on fire and falling apart and shit. Like everything's in chaos. You get, I think, kind of a weird part in the final scene here where like Death rides by on a horse. Like you see like this ghost. Yeah. It's like, okay. But they're like, what should we do? And then Hal's like, let's go dancing. You know, it kind of goes back to what his mom said at the beginning where it's like, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, he's like, the best we could do is keep this monkey close to us and not turn the key. Like, basically, don't do things to bring about your own death, but that's about the best you could do. And I like, to me, like, the whole movie works as a metaphor and kind of like as an elevated version of Final Destination. I really enjoy it, but hear like your thoughts on it.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked it too when I saw it back when it came out in February. Mm-hmm. Very similar thought to you. Like it's this very dark, dark film with these heavy themes that like has this like funny humor that may or may not work for people. Like if you don't like dry humor, like it's not, you might not find it as funny. But it did work for me. I laughed through a lot of this film. And so did some of the people in the theater. Like it was about half of us that are laughing at it. I think the others were horrified and probably thought we were nuts, but I think it has some great kills in it that are really well shot and entertaining. There's this cool, maybe not cool, but there's this strong like emotional tie between the brothers and the son, and how like all that kind of plays out over and over again as you try to hide yourself from the consequences of life. And instead, you should just, hey, don't do things that are going to fuck things over for you. Like we're going to put you in danger. But otherwise, just go and live your life. Like, kind of like the whole point of it is like, go live your life. Don't do things that are going to fuck you over. It's a nice message to kind of come away from a horror film. So, yeah, I really, really enjoyed this one quite a bit.
Yeah, me too. Score?
I'm going to go 8 out of 10.
I'm 8.5. Like, I really, like, this is, like, my favorite horror movie of the year, probably. And will it be top? Maybe. But so far, I just, it's one that I just, like, just tickled me. I was just like, this is just so great. And it's because, like, you know, I guess getting into our next movie, it's like, I'm a huge fan of the Final Destination movies. And it, like, really felt like an elevated, reimagined version of that. It's kind of what I hoped Final Destination Bloodlines would be. But as it turns out, our next film, Final Destination Bloodlines, which just came out, is very true in like nature and tone to the rest of the series. It almost feels like something that could have came out in the mid-2000s. But I guess I'll show my cards right away. I think it's a very, very clever and fun entry in the series and might be my favorite of the whole series.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Family, you don't get to pick the one you get. Just gotta love the one you got.
I always knew this day would come.
I got it.
I don't think you got it.
I held him off for years.
Charlie! Get up here!
He's a relentless son of a bitch. Won't stop till he finishes the job. Death is coming for our family.
I said, oh, 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 oh.
Grandma, what's happening to us?
Years ago, I had a premonition that started it all.
I saw what death was about to do. I saved a lot of lives that night.
Everyone needs to get off the dance floor!
Lives that were never meant to be saved. But death doesn't like it when you mess with his plans.
This book, it will show you everything you need to know to keep our family safe.
It all started with Grandma. Death is coming for us because we were never supposed to exist.
Watch out!
Only by embracing death will it pass you by.
Maybe death's not actually coming for our family. Because that would be crazy.
Good luck.
This is directed by Zap Lipofsky and Adam Stein. They have not done much. I remember hearing, though, when they got this gig, which was like, they pitched this during COVID over a Zoom call. And I guess did some elaborate prank in the background with like people dying and shit, and that's how they got the job. They're clearly like big fans of the series. Like you can just feel that all over this, including by the screenplay, which is by Guy Busick and Laurie Evans Taylor. It's three story credits as well, including John Watts, who did like the Spider-Man movies. This came out May 16th of this year. Budget of $50 million. It's gone on to be one of the biggest success stories of the year. It's really kind of amazing to me. It's already done $190 million box office. The opening weekend, it made more money than like all the others combined in their runs, which is crazy to me. Which just tells me like, I wasn't alone in wanting these movies. Like these, the last movie came out in 2011.
It was definitely a while ago, yeah.
And so it's been a long, long time, and it's just like the I guess the hunger, like I think the fan base built over the years, like people heard about these movies and seen them. But it's just been so long, people I think were just excited to have a new one of these, and I think luckily they like again they're not reinventing the wheel with this one at all. But I do think it's very clever and very fun, and there is some new spins on it. So this one actually starts, like, what, back in the 60s?
Yep, 1968.
Yeah, and so, like, all the Final Destination movies have to start with this big disaster scene where a bunch of people die, and then you find out at the end of it, it's someone's premonition as they're about to walk into this situation. They freak out. and they end up saving a handful of people. And then since those people have thwarted Death's plans, Death comes for them. Now this is a little different, this one. Same idea, kind of. But it's at the opening of this, like, basically Space Needle-like thing. It's like a restaurant, but, it looks like the Seattle Space Needle.
Yeah, which is what I thought when I saw, like, the...
Oh, yeah, everyone assumed,
like,
yeah.
Oh, it's, like, going to take place in the Space Needle. That's fucking nightmarish. I've been up that thing.
Oh, yeah. Scary
enough.
Did you find this to be, like, an accurate, like, did it kind of look and feel like how that would be? Like, the elevator and all that? Like,
No, I mean, it was way more rickety than it is
in real life.
The actual Space Needle, but yeah, like it's how you kind of envision it in your head for sure.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyways, they're going to I guess it makes no sense because like they built this whole fucking Space Needle to have a restaurant at the top of it. Like,
yeah,
you'd spend billions of dollars to build this. But it's a young couple, they're going to it. They're going, I think they're
crashing it, actually.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like the guy's gonna like propose to her, right? Or like,
yep.
And she has this vision of catastrophe, and I'd say this is like one of the better openings of the whole series. Like, nothing will ever top, for me, the airplane one than the first one, because that made me afraid to fly. And there was such a sense of dread to that one. I think most people would still probably stick with Final Destination 2 with the highway scene.
The logs, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Pretty terrible.
But this one's pretty great. There's some pretty great stuff that goes down in it. Like, there's one part she's like hanging by her finger. Oh, she's about to fall off.
It's like on her ring.
The ring is holding her up, and then she gets degloved. Oh.
Oh.
But at the end of all of it, you find out it's not this lady having a premonition or something. It's like this girl who lives now who is having dreams about this. Yeah. And surprise, surprise, she's dreaming about her grandmother. But the thing that's different here is that her grandmother didn't just like save a few people from a catastrophe. She got the whole place evacuated and prevented the whole catastrophe from ever even happening. It's an interesting spin. But I loved what they did with it, which is you find out that everyone who survived then, like you're talking hundreds of people, they were all meant to die, and death has been coming for them all these years. And it's going in the order, like, just like in the other movies, it's going in the order of how they would have died. And so that's why in 2025 or whatever now, death is still not wrapped up. Killing all these people and all their bloodlines, like their children and their children's children. It's still getting to people. And so like, her granddaughter was never there and had nothing to do with it. Like, she and her entire family should have never existed. I think that's pretty neat, but I think what's even neater about it is it ties the whole series together, because you find out that basically everyone who's died in this whole series, like, somehow is related to somebody who was in that Space Needle in the 60s. I thought that was clever. I don't know how you felt about it. Like, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's a cool idea to, like, okay, so this person was saved at the Skyview, and then that directly results in the plane crash in the first one, or the truck scene in the second one, or the race car scene.
Yeah.
Like, it all like ties in directly. So it's a cool way of tying everything together, unlike how Mission Impossible did it.
I wasn't against what Mission Impossible did. But like, what I like about it here is like, it could have been so easy to go the other route where it's like Halloween 2018, where just like none of the sequels mattered, none of it. This is not connected to anything, or none of it counts. Like, this movie's like, no, it all counts, and like, it's all, we can explain it all. Like, and it's, of course, all like this ridiculous nonsense, but whatever.
Yes.
I like this series nonsense, and I like that they like had the balls to stick with it and go, no, yeah, that's why all the other movies happened, is because of what happened here back in the 60s. I like that. You even get like a kind of an origin story for Tony Todd's character,
mm-hmm.
who he plays like the like a mortician or whatever, right? In the series.
Yeah, I think in this he's like a he's like a coroner or something.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, the coroner. And you know, he's popped up in most of the movies, and he like gives like these people warnings about that. Like he kind of knows all the rules and this and that. And you find out here it's because he was the you know like the little boy that you see like in the beginning of the movie who was with his mom. I thought that was really cool to give that like but this kind of cameo.
And he's the last to die too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this cameo character, like to give him like, hey, here's his origin, here's where he comes from. I thought that he basically gives the same message as the movie The Monkey, where like he's just like, you know, we all have to go at some point, and all you can do is enjoy the time that you have here. And it hits because he's talking about himself. Like, you know, Tony Todd is like clearly sick in this movie.
Yeah, he didn't. He did not look good.
And he like basically says like, "I got the cancer now, and it's my time to go soon." And he's like, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to enjoy my time." I'm not quoting it like word for word. That's basically the gist of his like little speech, right?
Yes. Yep.
And the interesting thing about that is, at least according to the filmmakers, they let him like improvise that. They're like, you know, what would you like stay in character, but what would you like to say as like a final goodbye to your fans and shit? I was like, damn. Like, I don't know, man. I kind of got misty-eyed for a second in a Final Destination movie out of nowhere because I'm just like, damn, dude. But what we really come here for is the elaborate Rube Goldberg death sequences. I think this movie has a handful of really fun ones. Do you have any favorites in here?
I mean, I enjoy the whole opening sequence. The
yes.
That's a good one. I also like the... And this is my problem with the movie in general. It's not a problem of the movie, but... There was a lot of promotion for this film over the last 6 months. And they've spoiled like three of the big scenes. Like, so the sky view was spoiled. Like my other favorite is the one in the tattoo parlor. That one, I think that was the entire first trailer. Like that was.
Yeah. But that's a fake out because that's not how he dies.
It is. He's not how he dies. Yeah. But like that whole scene is really cool. And then, it's fucking hysterical. But then the lawnmower scene in like the cookout.
You're the second person that had said this to me. That's like that didn't even occur to me to be the, like one of my favorite ones.
Like it's neat. Just there's a lot of tension in that. Like it's not a
yes. Good there's danger everywhere. You're like, what's like, going to be? Is it the ice in the glass? Is it the rake under the thing? Yeah.
But all three of those were also in the trailers. But they I found all three of them also super fun in the movie. there's a really dumb one. I mean, it's fun, but it's really dumb. The MRI machine.
Oh, that's my second favorite. That's amazing. It's the kid in the tattoo shop. He's like their cousin or whatever.
Yeah.
I think they did something clever with him too, because they're like, oh, they're going in the order of, you know, your births or whatever.
Oh yeah,
and he doesn't die in the tattoo shop, and then it's revealed to him. They're like, I know why you didn't die. Like, and I was like, I know why you didn't die. You were adopted, or whatever. Or like, you know, or you weren't
your dad was the neighbor.
Yes, that's why he's like, is that why you always wanted to play catch with me?
That's a great line.
And but he eventually gets it because he fucked with death.
That's also because they do that fake out and you don't know that yet. They get the sister with the fucking trash can.
Okay, so that's my favorite one.
That one's really good. That one's funny.
So the cousin, the guy with all the piercing, the statue guy, they're like trying to warn him. And he's just like, I'm not scared. Nothing's going to happen. And she's like, what if the ball bounces and hits this and it hits the hose and does, like, I don't know. There's a bunch of, like, she basically like fantasizes a Rube Goldberg thing. He's like, they walk right past the house. Nothing happens. He's like, ooh, you see, nothing happens. They keep walking. They say hi to his sister, who's running the other way. She's, like, out jogging. She's running the other way. And you see this play out in the background, like, exactly what the one girl said. happens to her, and it knocks her into a garbage can on the curb just as the garbage truck is picking it up. It's just hilarious. Like a great back, like the whole.
And it's all in the background.
Yeah, the whole setup of it, and then like to have it happen as a background gag is so fucking awesome. But then you get to see them trying to save her, and oh, that's a good one. Like the garbage truck just like crushes her fucking skull. Groot. I'd say the only bad thing about this movie is like that one is clearly CGI.
Yeah,
but it's so fun that I just didn't care. I like that. That's my favorite one in the whole movie, and then the MRI mission is the other one. He's in a room. Another clever thing, I think they're trying to like momentarily kill this one kid and bring him back because that might get Death to skip him. They're like giving him peanut butter because he has an allergy. This MRI machine gets too. What's that?
Great bit there too with the he hands him like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Yeah.
And he like bites him, you know, and he's like, oh my god, these are so good.
This is fucking good. Yeah. I know, right? But yeah, the MRI machine gets turned up like to max, like research level. And this dude has a lot of piercings, and so it's so funny. You see his dick go up in his pants. Yeah, those are my two favorites. There's another thing, like another like new thing that they added to it, where there's a physical manifestation here too, like the monkey, where it's like this lucky penny that travels through time, like throughout, yeah. All this, like you see like this little shithead kid in the beginning, like taking a penny out of a fountain, which you're not supposed to do. It's bad luck. And it turns out to be really bad luck for the rest of the time.
For everybody, yep.
And leading up right to the end where somehow the penny ends up stuck in the train tracks and derails a train. And that's a big final kill with. They think they've escaped and they solved everything. And the train does miss them. They're like, and then they're still like running away. And a log truck runs into the debris, and you just see these two huge logs come over the top, hit the two remaining characters, the brother and sister, and cut to credits. Obviously, they're doing lots of nods to like part two there. Like they kind of tease that log truck too for a little bit near the end.
They were promoting the film.
I know, yeah.
Brooks, like,
good but again, stuff. It's just another, like, obviously the people that made this, like, really enjoy the series. That's kind of it. I didn't go through plot point by plot point. Just, I told them the big things, and we talked some of the big kills that we liked. And, like all these movies, they think they made it at the end, but they did not, because there's no cheating death. What'd you think of it?
It's a good fun time. I watched it in almost packed theater. Everyone really had a good time with it. I think they do some smart things in a way to tie it all together as a franchise, which has like played within like having an overarching narrative, like tying things together. Yeah. They're able to tie all of them together at once. Really cool there. Some really fun, innovative, setups for Death. That lawn sequence is super tense. Like it's a ton of fun to watch. I just had a really good time watching it. I think I'll go 7 out of 10 here.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the series. A lot of them are like, some of them are straight up bad. Like part four is terrible. I'm just so happy to have it back. Again, I was hoping for them to like reimagine it and make it something more artsy, but I guess I got that in the monkey. They kind of stuck to the tone and stuff of these movies, and guess what? These 2000s horror movies are still fun now. And I'm happy they just didn't fuck it up. Like I found it to be clever, kind of winking to the fans, and I have to say, like, I think it might be the best one in a lot of ways. There'll always be that first one that scared me to death, but I think this is one of the best ones. For me, it's an 8, which I think that leads us to, we both kind of lean towards the monkey.
Yep, very slightly.
I did do a poll. It is negated now, but the poll went 100% the other, or not 100% the other way, 80% for this Final Destination. But we outweigh it with our two votes.
Just so wonder, like, whatever they did here, with Final Destination, they hit on what people wanted. Clearly, like, it's, you know, it's almost $200 million, and the monkey did well, but like, what, it was like 80, 90 million?
I think it's 70 something. Yeah.
So, like, I think more people probably have just seen Final Destination Bloodlines, and
that, bigger fan. It has a fan base. It's a series.
Yeah,
the monkey is just one movie that, you know, I think got mixed reaction. I think I am, like, you and I are, like, on the way higher end of reaction to the monkey. It just clicked with us. So that's our winner of these two, but I love them both. I think these are both really fun horror movies.
Yes, go watch.
If you're looking for a good time horror movies, these are it. And if you're death obsessed like I am, this is your shit. What are we doing next time, Chris?
All right. Well, I'm breaking all of our rules this time out, but we're going to watch a pair of religious films.
Okay.
But they're not horror films.
Okay.
We are going to watch a pair of religious comedies. The first being Dogma from 1999.
Is that available again?
It hits theaters in a week. It'll be in theaters. You'll be able to go see it, Jeff.
Okay. Well, it'll be on digital shortly after, because it might be one of those, like, it's there for a day.
No, like, I looked around, like, it's there. I mean, I can go. There's not a lot of screenings of it, but multiple screenings a day for at least a week in theaters. And then I think at that point, then it will hit digital for the first time ever.
Yeah.
So Kevin Smith's Dogma, it has been lost for what, 25 years now?
Yeah.
And the other film, I don't know if you've ever seen this one, Jeff, but it's called Saved, with Jenna Malone and Mandy Moore and Macaulay Culkin.
No.
Saved with an exclamation point.
Okay.
And that one is available on Hoopla or Roku, like, for free, if you have, like, a Roku, Roku channel. Otherwise, it's like a $4 rental somewhere.
Okay.
So these are, we're in June. This will be our June movies. It's Pride Month. These both are, you would be surprised, like, Jeff's like, Dogma's not gay coded at all, but Dogma is a very queer film, and so is Saved in a lot of ways. They're done from heterosexual viewpoints, but both are fairly coded. So
we'll be watching them in June, but they will be our show.
They'll be our July, our early July. Yeah.
All right.
With Dogma coming out, I was like, well, let's try this one. Let's go a little
out of the comfort zone. Yeah.
And you've never seen Saved, so I'll be interested
to see. No, yeah, I've never heard
of that one.
All right, we'll be back next time with some comedy.